This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. These days, we take free home mail delivery and the ease of a postage stamp for granted. But the service, which started in West Virginia, began with regional service that created a divide between city dwellers and their country kin.
That might be a really difficult trip and you needed to have transportation, you needed to have time, which you might not have. So there really is this big disconnect between rural and urban.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is provided by Hope Gas, committed to the growth and development of West Virginia to strengthen the community. Information at wvisforhope.com. 14 communities across West Virginia, from Beckley to Buchanan and Morgantown to Martinsburg, will take place in the annual National Night Out events on Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. National Night Out is an annual event designed to promote police community partnerships and camaraderie that makes neighborhoods safer. It began as a local effort in Philadelphia back in 1970 and now takes place in every state, as well as U.S. territories and military bases around the world. This year, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of West Virginia will join the National Night Out festivities at Charleston's Orchard Manor. For more information and to view a map of the events closest to you, visit our website at wvpublic.org. Most professional and hobby potters buy their clay, but not everyone. In Western North Carolina, a few potters dig their own clay and say using this traditional material makes all the difference. Anya Patrone Sleepian from the Rural Remix podcast has this story.
Outside, surrounded by mountains, Naomi Dalglish and Michael Hunt are processing wild clay. Michael has a 4-foot-long hand drill and a giant metal drum. He's mixing water with clay dirt to make a slip. The yellowish clay dirt they're using came from a nearby farmer's field. The first step in making the clay usable in their pottery production is mixing this slip, a watery clay slurry. Once the slip is the desired consistency, Naomi says it's time to strain out debris using a screen.
We actually have a couple of different sizes of screens because at this point we're deciding how much of the coarse material, like little bits of sand and small pebbles, we want to leave in the clay.
She pours the slip through a mesh screen that's fitted into a wooden frame.
We really enjoy having, like, a clay that has some texture to it. So this is, in a lot of ways, like one of the first aesthetic decisions that we're making.
Naomi and Michael are the team behind Bandana Pottery. They primarily make functional ceramics, like cups, bowls, trays, and vases, as well as some decorative items like large jars and sculptures. Michael says local traditions inspired them to start processing their own clay.
It kind of started from sort of seeing historical pots and seeing how a complexity and depth to the materials that we were really after. North Carolina has this amazing tradition of people using local clay that was kind of continuous.
Back outside, the slip is finished straining and is now in a large metal tub. Naomi opens a bag of feldspar and pours the white powder into the clay slurry as Michael continues to mix with the drill. The mineral lowers the firing temperature of the clay. Next, Naomi and Michael pump the mixture into wooden racks lined with fabric. For this, they use a large brown hose pipe. The mixture is left in the racks to dry. Naomi says it takes between 1 and 4 weeks for the clay to get to a working consistency.
It really depends on the weather, how long that process is going to take.
For most of human history, potters have been restricted to the types of clays available in the ground where they live. Each geography produces clay with different characteristics, and this has informed how each culture's pottery traditions have developed. North Carolina is known for its plentiful natural clay deposits. For 3,000 years, Cherokee potters have used local clays to create intricate and functional pots that are hand-coiled, paddled, and stamped. Later, European settlers and their descendants began making wheel-thrown pieces and created the iconic North Carolina ash glaze style. Digging and processing clay is a lot more labor-intensive than a trip to a clay supplier. But Naomi and Michael say it's well worth the effort for a lot of reasons. Part of it has to do with aesthetics.
It's kind of really about the expressive possibilities of particle size. We're playing with having the materials be fine enough to make functional pottery, but way coarser than like commercial materials.
Naomi and Michael say digging their own clay is also more environmentally sustainable than using commercial clays. It cuts down on transportation, and they're using a material that's otherwise a nuisance for local farmers.
It's like the sticky stuff that gets stuck on the bottom of their tractor wheels or in like a field that's where the water isn't draining as well. So it can actually cause some issues. So people are like, oh yeah, we know where that is. And are actually usually not too upset to let some of it go.
That was a story for Inside Appalachia from the Rural Remix podcast. To listen to the rest of that story and more, visit Inside Appalachia on our website. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Patchy fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today. High temperatures in the 80s. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, a slight chance of rain in the south with partly sunny skies, highs in the 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by the law firm of Jenkins Fenstermaker, representing businesses and individuals throughout West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky for over 100 years. Details at JenkinsFenstermaker.com. This year, the United States Postal Service turns 250. In its early days, the agency had to develop strategies to ensure equal access to mail, even among residents in hard-to-reach places. That effort spawned a rural delivery program that's still around today. As Jack Walker reports, rural delivery has a special place in West Virginia history, but some worry the service may face risks.
Paste a 78-cent postage stamp in the upper right corner of your envelope, and today you can mail a letter to any address in the U.S. But things weren't always so easy. Prior to the 1880s, picking up mail required residents to travel to their nearest post office. A trek that could take hours for some rural residents.
That might be a really difficult trip, and you needed to have transportation. You needed to have time, which you might not have. So there really is this big disconnect between rural and urban.
That's Allison Basilinski, a historian with the Smithsonian National Postal Museum. In 1887, the United States Postal Service began delivering door-to-door in towns with more than 10,000 residents. Still, it wasn't until 1896 that the Postal Service launched Rural Free Delivery, its method for bringing packages straight to rural households. Basilinski was one of several postal researchers and workers to participate in a pair of Shepherdstown panels on the history of rural delivery. And West Virginia's Eastern Panhandle is of particular importance to that program because Rural Free Delivery was established in Jefferson County.
So it is in 1896, with $40,000 appropriated by Congress, that service starts in West Virginia. And it was very popular very quickly.
That year, the first rural service route was created in Charlestown as part of a pilot phase. It was widely popular among farmers and their families. Within 1 year, rural service spread to 29 different states. By 1902, it was adopted nationwide. Folklorist and panelist Emily Hilliard says since then, rural mail carriers have become more than just service providers. They've become fixtures in regions with few people around to regularly check in on residents or lend support.
Rural mail carriers are lifelines in their communities. So they don't just deliver letters and packages. They deliver life-saving medications. They are the eyes and ears of their community. They are who people go to, you know, as we saw an example today, when they might be in need of care and they're stuck at home.
And Hilliard says that kind of work transcends the written responsibilities of the job.
I would say it's more than mail. It's about being care workers in their community. And some of that they're compensated for, and some of it is kind of beyond their job description and something they do because they are part of the communities that they deliver in.
Rural mail delivery may have a storied history in West Virginia, but some worry risks to the service may be on the horizon. Throughout both of his terms, President Donald Trump has floated the idea of privatizing the Postal Service as a way to save money and boost efficiency. A federal task force he commissioned in 2018 suggested the move could bring risks to rural communities, like longer wait times and a lower standard of service. For folks like Don Mastin, concerns like these remain. Mastin is president of the National Rural Letter Carriers Association, a labor union that represents rural mail carriers across the U.S.
We go to every house every single day, especially in rural America, and to take that away and privatize it and make it a for-profit business, they're going to have to put surcharges on or just eliminate that service altogether and leave rural America, who in many cases are a little more economically challenged than the folks in the city, and they rely more on their mail carrier.
Mastin said his organization thinks the Postal Service could explore other ways of increasing profits instead of privatization. For starters, he thinks the Postal Service should invest more heavily in parcel delivery, an area of the industry they inadvertently ceded to private companies. And Mastin said the Postal Service should act quickly as new service areas arise, like they did during the COVID-19 pandemic.
We delivered all those COVID test kits, but we also packaged them, addressed them, and sent them out. So that was a huge test on the Postal Service and just shows our ability to do a lot of different things that we aren't being utilized for.
Although he's now retired, Tim Thomason was a rural carrier for 31 years, delivering mail on the same route in Princeton, West Virginia. He worries risks to the Postal Service could impact reliable jobs in economically disadvantaged regions, the same jobs that once made a difference in his own life.
I had a high school education. I didn't go to college. I had done several things between the time I graduated from high school till I got the position at the Postal Service. Actually, really one of the probably top paying 5% jobs in the county that I'm from, Mercer County, especially without a college education.
But Thomason said it's not just about finances. For him, the loss of rural mail carriers would mean losing an integral part of rural communities.
Even though I didn't live in that community that I delivered, I became a part of that community.
A new leader for the United States Postal Service, David Steiner, was appointed as the nation's Postmaster General in July. He has come out against privatization and said he thinks the agency should maintain a self-financing model. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.
Every day, all around the world, this centuries-old art form is thriving. Classical music is made new with fresh interpretations of the great works and with groundbreaking premieres. There's a literal world of creativity to be discovered and shared. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the best from concert halls around the globe on APM's Performance Today. Weekday mornings 10 to noon on West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
I'm Sean Lay, host of BBC NewsHour. On today's programme, hundreds of former Israeli security officials say it's time to end the war in Gaza, as reports say Israel is to ramp up military operations there. And the Cuban snail's too beautiful to live.
This morning at 9 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
This is why y'all can't have nice things.
Mountain Stage will have two live shows this August. On Sunday, August 17th, we're in Charleston at the Culture Center Theater with Hayes Carl, Amethyst Kia, and more. And then Sunday, August 24th, we head to the Robinson Grand Performing Arts Center in Clarksburg with Robert Randolph, Carolyn Wonderland, and others. Find our whole schedule and get tickets at mountainstage.org.
This is WVPB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBL Bluefield, WVPW Buchanan, WVWV Huntington, WVEP Martinsburg, WVKM Matewan, WVPM Morgantown, WVPG Parkersburg, WVDS Petersburg, WVWS Webster Springs, WVNP Wheeling, and we're online at wvpublic.org. Patchy fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today. High temperatures in the 80s. Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We're online at wvpublic.org.